So thousands of years ago, maybe 2,500, maybe 3,000, I'm not sure exactly, there was a city named Babel in the land of Shamir. And Babel was built by a... Got it? Babbling, there was Babel. Yeah, that was great, right on cue, huh? Babel was built by a man named Nimrod. Really was his name. And Nimrod was the great, probably great-great grandson of Noah. No, actually, I think it was a great-grand, and it doesn't matter. He was several generations back from Noah, so he came by his building, his prowess to build very honestly, right? Noah built the ark, as we know, the great epic flood with all the animals going two by two. And when the flood was over, there's the one human family still together, all in this little city called Babel. And somebody in the city had an idea to build a tower. The idea was that if they built a tower high enough, they could reach God. They could enter the kingdom of heaven that way. They could get closer to God. And so they began to build. And when they got a little closer and a little closer, suddenly something happened. There was a confusion of their languages. It appears that God didn't really like the idea of them building the tower to heaven. And so they couldn't, there was just mayhem, right? They couldn't understand each other. They all spoke different languages. And so when they came back down from the tower, everybody dispersed in different directions according to the languages they could understand of one another. And that's the parable of how language began, the multiple languages that we have on the earth. But of course, as with all these stories, they have a deeper other meaning as well. Charles Fillmore, our co-founder, wrote with many scholars the book, The Metaphysical Bible Dictionary. And in it, he talks about this story as a story of our confusion that ensues when we think that it is through outer means that we reach the divine. So there was a line about the tower and this idea in their song. And so this idea that we think that somehow that through our mental capacity or physical capacity that we get lost in the distractions of the world and we think somehow that's going to bring us closer. And instead, of course, it is the opposite of that, right? It's the inward journey. It's the going within. It's through spirit that we come closer. So it's that place that, you know, that old parable of how God was put in all these different places and before creation and it was said, oh, they'll never find you at the high mountain, or they'll never find you, you know, let's put God below the earth, and they'll never, oh no, they'll find you there, and you know, all these different places. And it's like, oh, I got it, let's put God within them, they'll never think to look there, you know. And so it is that this turning of moving ourselves from the things we get caught up in mind and the things we get caught up in creating in the world, in the physical, that isn't really going to get us there. That first we must look within. Charles Fillmore also pretty famously said that at one point, because it was the 1800s when a lot of these new ideas were coming forth, these philosophies of transcendentalism and some of the ideas that were coming out of Christian Science about faith healing, there were many, many movements that were coming together and that were influencing a lot of new thoughts. And Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, our co-founders, were a part of that revolution, a part of that period of time. But there was so much different stuff to think about and to take in and to meditate upon. And Charles said in his frustration, in all this babble, I'm going to go straight to headquarters, because if this God is spirit and I'm spirit, as according to what they say, then the two of us must be able to communicate, or the whole thing is a fraud. And so it was through that he sort of very scientifically, in a way, very kind of a cold and calculated sort of sit down and I'm going to sit here and pray and see what happens, you know. But it was over time that actually something started to stir within him. This was, of course, after he watched what Myrtle did and saw what worked for her. And so it's this idea that the towers that we build, whatever those metaphors are, right? These ideas that we build that we think are somehow, this is it. This is the innovation that is the highest and best, right? That's going to get us to the divine, to be the king or the queen of whatever, is so off the mark, because it has to start from that internal spirit. It has to start from that internal bonding, essentially. You know, if a bricklayer is going to make something, they have to, any good bricklayer will know that you have to put your bonding material down first, right? You have to have that which the brick will stick to. And it is this divine spirit, this love within us, this light within us that is the sticking. That is the stuff that brings us together with the truth of who we are and the parts of ourselves. And it's what brings us together, one to another, one heart to another, one soul to another, one spirit to another. So one of the things about in the story, the language idea, that there are all this confusion of the languages, right? Initially, because there are all these different languages, so initially we think we can't understand each other. How many of you have ever had an interaction with somebody who spoke a different language and you understood each other perfectly, even though you didn't speak that actual language? Anybody have that experience? Oh, lots of you have. Yeah, isn't that amazing how we can transcend that? In fact, often it's very sacred to hear a chant or a song in another language because we feel it underneath the words, right? We're not caught up in the words that keep us up here, but instead we're in that place of feeling. And so that helps us. I remember being in Italy once, and I was lost, and this man came up to help me, and I didn't speak a word of Italian, and he didn't speak a word of English, and I completely and perfectly understood his directions as if GPS were standing there. But he was full of gestures, you know? So I got all of his gestures and his intent. And so his intent for me to understand and my intent to understand him was enough. As many of you who raised your hand know, that it is the underlying that allows us to understand one another. So in Spanish, there's a word called conocimiento. And conocimiento doesn't really have an exact translation in English, but it's basically to nurture connection by sharing knowledge with each other. And so the basic idea is that it is by sharing with one another that we connect. Roberto Vargas, who's a community expert, said, conocimiento is like if I reach out my hand and I say something, I introduce myself and I share something about myself, and then I invite you to share something about yourself. And so it goes, the connection, right? It's a connection. It's how we connect. Another way he says it is, conocimiento is like when I sit with my mother or my daughter and I say, how are you doing? You know, it's that kind of pause and connection and really wanting to know, you know, from that heart space. It's not when we pass each other quickly and we're all caught up in our projects and wherever it is that we think we have to go in such a hurry and we say, how are you? Oh, I'm fine. How are you? You know, and we're not even really listening or looking. And so, you know, we all do that, right? We all get caught up in laying the bricks without any bonding, you know, just or focused on laying the next brick, focused on what it is we think we are creating out here, what we are building out here, what we are expanding in the mind. But we sometimes lose track of what we need here for it to stick, for that innovation or that project or that creation to really make something of itself, essentially. So this concept of conocimiento, I think I experienced pretty directly on Thursday. I was on BART. I was headed to a meeting in San Francisco, and it was really, it was morning, so it was really busy on BART, as apparently it always is at that time. And I was, you know, standing about a foot away from all of my neighbors, and I just started looking around the train and noticed pretty much everybody, not everybody, but almost everybody had their phone out, and that's what they were doing, you know, in their time. So, and I had been thinking about getting my phone out, but I had a cup of tea in my hand, so I couldn't juggle it all. So I was just sipping my tea and looking around and noticing. And then I thought, you know what, I'm not going to get my phone out, because I know what's going to happen when I get my phone out. I'm going to click on this, and I'm going to click on that, and I'm going to read this story and that story, and I'm going to read about everything that divides us and ails us. And that doesn't sound like a great way to start the day, and it doesn't really sound like what I want to be doing anyway. And so I thought, I'm curious about the people around me. So the man sitting on his bike right in front of me, I just struck up a conversation with him. Now, on the outside, we would look very different, male, female, black, white. He's from, I found out, from the northern or the southern United States. I'm from the northern United States, you know. So there's all these, you know, we could keep looking for differences, and I'm sure we could find a lot. But instead, we just started talking about bicycling and about other things. And I mentioned that I bicycled in San Francisco once, but then I had to kind of walk it back and say, well, actually, I walked the hills of San Francisco with my bike. And so we had a good laugh together, and then somehow we got on the topic of homelessness, and we were talking about, you know, just out of a care and concern and curiosity about that, we were sharing stories of things we've experienced, and so there was all this connection going on in their 30-minute ride, you know, that could have been divided and separated like we tend to do in our society instead. And I thought about how, you know, if my new friend and I were to engage in a project at this point, maybe a bicycle project or a homelessness project or giving bicycles to homeless people, I don't know, but something obviously that we both were interested in and connected on and we have different perspectives and experiences of, we could really create something out of just that initial bond. Had we not bonded first, the project that we would create, I don't think, would be as effective or as successful. And so it's the base of everything, this inner bonding with spirit, and then this bonding spirit to spirit, heart to heart. It's the glue that holds whatever it is that we want to co-create, whatever it is that we want to build. That is the space in which we make for it. So it's such a key thing, and it's such a simple thing, really. You know, Mark Nepo, the author of the book we're using for this fall series, More Together Than Alone, he says that what we build visibly in the world depends on what we build invisibly between us. Anything that we build visibly in the world, it depends on what we have built invisibly between us. You see, if we build out of separation, if we build out of divisiveness, if we build out of this otherness, our tower's going to crumble, whatever that proverbial tower is. Something's going to happen. We're not going to reach that ultimate place that we wanted to reach because we've missed the mark somehow. So Mark tells of another story, of another version of the story of the Tower of Babel that was in Genesis that I talked about a few moments ago. It's one out of the land of Uruk, which is where Iraq is now. And in this story, a very similar story, that the people is the first human tribe, the first family, human family, still together. And they're in the land of Uruk, and somebody has a great idea. Let's build a tower. And they want to build a tower. This time, the purpose in this story is they build that tower because if they build it, a nice high tower, that when the people are off in the forest or in the fields or whatever it is, they will always be able to find their way home because it'll be the center of the village and it'll be a great marker that will be seen all over the land. So the people at that time were very excited about this dream and this idea, and they had a lot of passion for it. And so they began to build, and they were making lots of progress. But I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but even back then, they experienced the fact that the building took a lot longer than they estimated originally. Anybody ever experienced that in the world? It seems to always be that way, doesn't it? And so it was three generations later, and the tower was still not complete. So now we've got the great-great-grandchildren of the original people that had this united purpose and passion and excitement to build this tower so everybody could find home. And the generation then had kind of lost the plot, you know? They weren't that excited about the purpose. They didn't want to, I mean, they were doing it because it was their duty, right? That's what they were supposed to do, was to build the tower, but they were building on somebody else's dreams, and it wasn't their own. They didn't own it. Anybody ever had those experiences? In your families, in institutions, you know, it's everywhere, right? That we are still kind of marching along and we're just not really sure why we're doing what we're doing. But everybody else is doing it, or that's what we were taught that we were supposed to do, or that's what our ancestors did, or whatever it may be. And so we're sort of lackluster, kind of going through the motions. And so this is the case for these folks. So at this time when they were building, it would take about a year for a worker to get all the way, or for a brick to travel all the way to the top of the tower and lay a brick. So you can imagine how slow going this is going to be. And they still got a pretty good tower, but they're working. So So one day a worker reaches the top to put the brick on, and something happens, and he falls, and the worker dies. Here's the really sad part, even sadder part. The people mourned the loss of the brick more than the loss of the worker. Because, you know, sometimes we put the object over the people. Sometimes we think the thing that we are making, the thing, the material thing, the object, whatever it is more important than the people. And this is when we really get confused. And that's about when the confusion started. In fact, it's just about then that the same thing happened in this story, where suddenly everybody spoke different languages and nobody could understand each other. And part of the reason why they couldn't understand each other is because they had lost this home, right? They had lost their heart, their connection to heart, their connection to spirit, the connection to each other. They had lost their connection to the purpose. They had lost their connection to a life, an aliveness, a passion. And so it was out of that that then this confusion was created, and out of the greater confusion, they attempted to loot heaven. And so all of this happened once again, that the language caused the people to disperse in many different directions. So here we are again in a kind of babble, right? Like this, but what really ails us? What really ails us is this kind of brick over person thing, brick over worker thing, object over thing over life. That's really where we get tripped up, isn't it? That's really where the confusion happens. And what could help us, you know, in Chinese, there's the word for crisis actually means challenge and opportunity. And so if we can no longer speak the same languages and we are dispersing, what is our charge? To find home again, right? And when, as we find home, we begin to get closer and closer to truth, closer and closer to spirit, closer and closer to one another, and we realize, oh, we do have more in common. We do have some of the same language. We do have some of the same values. We do have some of the same things that connect us. In fact, we have the same source at home that connects us and animates us and gives us life. And so it's that kind of homecoming that we're really in today, it seems to me, that we are all kind of walking back home and on the way, awakening to our purpose, awakening to our spirit, awakening to each other, awakening to the fact that we are one human family. We have one religion, love. We speak one language, the language of spirit, the language of our souls. And even where we are uniquely one, that is a part of the beauty of our diversity. So instead of seeing the languages and the cultures and the differences as some kind of problem, we begin to see them for the richness that they bring, the tapestry that we weave, the wholeness that comes together through our uniqueness, through our diversity, through the beauty of that, that we make something more beautiful and more creative and stronger and more resilient. So it's that space that it seems that we are coming back into, to recognize that heaven, no, it's not made out of brick, but we have this this beautiful sort of symphony available to us of all that we are and can be together. It's much like the birds, you know, when they awake in the morning, they begin to sing to the first light, right? And the first bird sings, and it's a song of joy for the light, but it's also they're creating a map to find each other. And so out of the confusion of the darkness comes the light and comes the voice of one bird to let another bird know, here I am, isn't it a beautiful day? And then another bird says, oh, I hear you, there you are, here I am. And then yet another bird, and then yet another bird, and yet another bird. And before you know it, we have this harmony of all these unique voices singing together in one song. That's really key for us, isn't it? And it can be a variety of different kinds of birds that add to the song. And it can be a call and response sometimes, like we just sang a little bit ago, where there's a leader who starts the song and then another bird that echoes that song, because the birds feel it in their hearts, right? They sing from their hearts. And that's really a reminder to us of the natural that natural energy that we have within us, that natural ability that we have within us to find that which brings us joy, that which is the light, that which is dawning on us, this awakening that is dawning, and sing for that, and we find each other through that. The birds also are true to their own soul song. So in finding our voice, we don't muffle our voice to try to fit in, but we do our own soul song, our own unique soul song, because that is needed. Otherwise, there's a rent in the fabric of humanity. There's a hole in the song sheet of humanity where we don't have the courage to sing our own soul song, where we muffle our voice. And then it is also for us to hear the uniqueness and the beauty of each other's soul songs, to recognize that everybody has something to bring to the table, that everybody has something to bring to the tower. We all have bricks made from around the world, if you will, but those bricks are infused now and understood that they have to be bonded together in order to make what it is that we co-create together. So this is the base, that it's all about bonding in order to build, that it's all about recognizing the diversity that comes together as one, like the birds. That is really the key to this walk of knowing that we are more together than alone, of knowing that community is what really drives us at this time to awaken. Community is sort of the toolbox that we have to spiritually awaken. And so it has to be the connection here, but it can't stop there. For so long, our unity movement has been about the individual path, right? The personal path, the personal experience and the spiritual practice of the one individual. And that is a centering piece. That is an absolute important piece, but it's not where it ends. Today, we are really drawn to get out in the world and to co-create with each other. It must be so. And we must see our differences as something that is a part of the whole, that will be a wonderful addition to whatever it is that we are making together. At Unity, we have a new vision statement. We envision a spiritually awakened world where all life thrives in conscious oneness. Isn't that beautiful? Yeah, it took a lot of voices in this community, a lot of opinions, a lot of ideas, a lot of brainstorming and heartstorming and prayer to come up with that. But in the end, we came back to spiritual awakening and oneness. We came back to seeing that truth and that all life, that inclusivity of all life thrives in that. And in order to do that, we just must remember that the bonding happens before the building. So other people will come here, new people will come through our doors, and it will be our call to bond, to create, put a hand out, conocimiento. Let me tell you something about me, let me hear something about you. Let's make a bond. Because as we make a bond, we can then build the spiritually awakened world. We can then build a world that thrives in conscious oneness. So we are builders and we are bonders of spirit. That's the truth of who we are. Let's know it together. I am a bonder and builder of spirit. So you are. So it is.